News Radio WJPF, the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League, Brad Cole's on the other end of the line this morning. Morning, Brad. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Tom. I'm well. Hope you are and your listeners also.
Number one question. Have the cure funds been begin to be dispersed in Illinois outside of Chicago and Cook County?
Well, let me give you the long answer on that. No.
Yeah? I was afraid you were going to say that.
As you know, and we've talked about here on your show, we had a meeting of the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules before the General Assembly last week. They had pushed the State Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity to bend in the rules that they had proposed, and we got them to move on their timeline, which they had restricted and shortened for municipalities and local governments to use the money. But DCEO refused to change its rules and allow local governments to use the funding to the full extent of the federal law. So we fought that battle. Very frustrating. We lost it. And the DCEO is implementing their guidelines the way they want to, which is going to significantly reduce the amount of money that will be able to be spent by local governments in their local community based on the federal allocation. So some of that money is going to go back to the state. Who knows what they'll do with it or where it will be spent or even when it will be spent. But we were not successful in getting that change made. Very frustrating. And it's frustrating because, as you and I have talked, those dollars, which we've actually enumerated, would go to these communities throughout all of Illinois and be of benefit to the businesses and the people, the residents. And for some reason, DCEO just doesn't want to take part in that.
All right. And here's the thing. Those rules, are they also – now, does Cook County and Chicago, who've already received my money – true, that's correct, right?
Their money was
sent direct to them by the federal government. They made an exception carve-out for them. They observed the original rules defined in Washington by Congress, while the rest of the state plays by the rules designed by a departmental body with no elected officials in it. While at the same time, Brad, JCAR, you have to have eight of the 12 votes, so two Republicans had to side with this.
Yeah, so it was the JCAR split equally, six Republicans, six Democrats. So there was support for our position, but there wasn't enough support for it to get to that two-thirds majority vote, which is required to overturn administrative rules. And you indicated properly that the federal government did direct allocations to the city of Chicago and the five largest counties in Illinois. They can use the funding in full accordance with the federal law. The 97 other counties, which includes 1,200 municipalities, have to use the funds the way the state says, and that's a lot more restricted than what the federal government allowed. And so the money is just not going to be able to be spent. It was, I think, an exercise in bureaucracy. And while I know this won't make me any friends with the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, I don't think I have any left there because we've been so adamant in our position. But they definitely took a position of, no, we can't, where we, local officials, the Illinois Municipal League and others, were taking a yes, we can approach. Like, yes, we can use these dollars. Yes, we can put them out in our communities. Yes, we can make a difference. Yes, we can help our residents and business owners. And their approach, in our perspective, was, no, we can't. Let's create a bureaucracy, and that's what we're left with.
I spoke with some small town mayors in particular under these new guidelines. They believe that they will, the vast majority of the money, they will not be able to keep it.
I agree fully. If I may, let me go into just a little bit about what we're telling folks. Because I had a community leader just yesterday say, well, we were supposed to get about $20,000, but we didn't have that much expenses directly related to COVID, so I guess we'll just tell the state they can have the money back. And I said, well, before you do that, you can buy personal protective equipment, PPE, you can buy face coverings, you can buy protective gowns, you can buy plastic gloves, you could even buy a laptop computer if that's what is necessary for your city employee to be able to work from home. There are ways to use those dollars and keep them in the community before you have to send them back to the state. And so I said, why don't you buy everybody a dozen face masks that live in the community? Give them to all the residents. Ask your businesses what type of PPE or other health-related equipment they might need so you can buy it, give it to them, and then be reimbursed so you can use the full amount of your allocation. So that's what we're encouraging people to do, and we want people to start thinking about that because that will allow them to use some of the money and help their residents and businesses. Just sending it back to state government isn't going to do that.
You know, it's interesting when you say that. I try to transplant myself into another person's position. That's easy for me to do, and I live in the small town of Carterville. If I'm Brad Robinson, I think, okay, I got the sandwich shop, I got the burgers over here, I've got the gas station. I can help them with their overhead and financial viability by taking some of the PPE precautionary burden off. So it, on its own right, it's an economic stimulus because they're allowed to keep that other money they would otherwise spend to be able to ensure the viability of their business going forward.
Right. They're going to have to spend money to buy that equipment for their employees. And, you know, for Mayor Robinson, with the Carterville about 6,000 residents, why not buy 60,000 face masks?
Right.
And have enough to give everybody 10 or 12 and have a supply of those and be able to be ready if we have some issue next time. We're looking at this, I think too many people are, as what happened over the last 5 months or what's going to happen in the next 5 months. But we need to be looking at this over what's going to happen in the next 5 years. And so let's use those dollars now, and even though it's restricted by the state, let's use them as best we can, and let's keep those dollars in the communities. And why not buy 60,000 face masks so that you have enough to give every resident of that community 10 or 12? I think it makes sense, and it's allowable under the law.
Here's a question from the American Monument text line this morning. Why aren't the feds being told the monies are not being dispersed? And I think the caveat to that statement, in my own words, is used in the way in which they were originally intended and voted on in Washington. And you know as a fact, I've already contacted and will be speaking with Senator Dick Durbin on this very subject tomorrow morning at around 8:20. I don't know what time it'll come up in the interview, but that's when it starts. Because I've already talked to him, and I've talked to Congressman Mike Bost as well, and I know you have too.
Yeah, so we've spoken with just about every member of Congress, and both of our senators have been supportive of our position, but it's the state's decision. Now, I was on a call yesterday with a member of Congress and from Illinois, and you know, their hands were a little bit tied. They passed the law. It was signed by the president on March 27th, and here we are 5 months later. We still don't have any money that's been distributed, and the state has restricted it. The Congress hasn't acted on the next phase or round of relief, and what we're asking them to do is go back to the first one, go back to that CARES Act, and modify it. Allow us to use these dollars for lost revenues, and allow us to use these dollars for other things, and force the states, not just Illinois, unfortunately, but force the states to allow their local governments to do that. So if the Congress can act and go back retroactively and say, here's some changes to the CARES provisions, and this is what states must allow their local governments to do, then we can get that fixed. But to the question on your text line, they very much have been told, they most certainly, we have expressed our position, the Illinois Municipal League, to the entire Illinois congressional delegation. And just the day after the JCAR meeting, we submitted a letter to every member of the Illinois congressional delegation that left no doubt that it was our position that the state has diverted or restricted these dollars, that not one cent has been received by any of these communities, and that our frustration is and was palpable.
Two issues, and then we're going to move on. Two sets of rules for two different people. Cook County and Chicago got their money directly, get the Washington, D.C. abilities to do it. The rest of the state, you haven't gotten your money yet, and can't go by what they originally want. All we know that if it was a Republican governor, they'd be screaming bloody murder in Washington, D.C. And I know that. You know that.
Oh, absolutely. And not only was what the State Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, what they did was a direct contradiction to the congressional intent, it created an inequity of opportunity that disadvantaged nearly 1,200 municipalities across the state. I mean, those are communities that are suffering, and unfortunately, they're all within, not all of them, but every community within your listening area is included in that group. It was totally unnecessary. The inequity of opportunity that was created is punishing. And during a global health pandemic, we should be helping people, not placing additional restrictions on them. But it's just very frustrating. And I'm glad you've gotten me worked up on this topic this morning. My colleagues are going to appreciate that the rest of the day.
Well, to be honest with you, this is probably one of the most upsetting things that I'm dealing with right now, because we know it's there, we know the intent. But like I said, we're going to move on, and we're going to move on to this. The Illinois Municipal League lawsuit in talking about the election holiday, and I think this is interesting, and I haven't heard much about it, because you were literally quoted about this as being an antagonistic effort. We're asking for questions, and we can't get one. We don't if this applies to local governments, because it didn't address the municipal code, and we're talking about an election day holiday. What's the status? You filed this lawsuit about 3 weeks ago.
Right. So when the General Assembly met in special session, they created some additional vote-by-mail opportunities, and then they made election day, November 3rd, a state holiday for, quote, all government offices, end quote. But they didn't specifically say that that includes the municipalities. It didn't modify or amend the municipal code. They only talked about schools and university civil service employees. So we said to the State Board of Elections, well, first we went to the General Assembly and said, well, what did you mean by this? Do you mean local governments? Got no response. Still to this day, I've had no response from the legislature about this. So we went to the State Board of Elections and said, look, you're going to have to enforce this. What does it mean? And they said, well, we don't really know, and we can't really tell you. So, you know, good luck. And they were friendly about it, so this is not a criticism about the State Board of Elections. So then we had no choice. So we filed a suit in Sangamon County and said, look, Judge, we need to know, does this impact our members? Does it impact the cities, villages, and towns of Illinois? Because if it does, then that's going to impact collective bargaining agreements. We're going to have to do scheduling different. City halls are going to have to close. Services are going to be limited. And we filed that, and we're waiting for the state to actually enter their appearance to respond. So what they're doing is slow walking it right now. They haven't even responded to the suit yet. They have to probably here in the next week or so and file their appearance so that we can then begin having this discussion. What we're looking for, Tom, is an answer. We're not trying to be adversarial. We are just trying to get an answer, because the law was so poorly written, so vague, and so inadequate in its description of who it affects. We don't know if it impacts us or not. Right. And apparently, neither does anybody else.
The Springfield Journal carried a partial transcript of the floor debate on the House floor. And apparently this was an issue even on the House floor when they were doing this law. And the quote is, well, currently General Election Day is already a holiday for state offices and employees. This would extend it to schools and universities and civil services, says the state representative. So, I mean, but that's just a singular sentence, and it doesn't mean it was voted on, but it apparently was, this very issue was discussed on the House floor during the legislation.
Well, that was almost the entirety of the debate.
Really?
About this piece of it. Yeah, and we included that. We have a transcript of the floor debate. Nothing was ever mentioned about municipalities, and that's why we're trying to get an answer. And we just, whatever the answer is, we'll comply with. But we have communities that need to know if they are going to be forced to close down and if their residents are not going to be able to get services that day, or if they can operate and function just like they ordinarily would. It's just a matter of very poor statutory construction. This is also a byproduct of the problems that were created by the special session, which didn't allow for public input, really. There was no committee process. These are the things, if this came up during a regular legislative session, that the Illinois Municipal League, and probably me in particular, would be at those hearings. We would be talking to the legislators. We'd be saying, here's a problem we need to fix. If you want to do that, okay, but this is what the language needs to say so that we don't have confusion later. And by having a four-day special session, that was not a part of the process. And so we're doing all this cleanup after the fact. And frankly, if we hadn't been paying attention and caught it, I don't know that anybody would have.
Brad Cole, Executive Director of the Illinois Municipal League, with us this morning. If you take COVID and cure money out of the conversation and you look at what your league members are facing as far as challenges, what would you isolate those priority challenges as?
Well, you know, the big one, I think it probably still relates to COVID, but is lost revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, the unfunded mandates that are placed on municipalities, and then as a result of the economic downturn, you know, we're looking at a 10% reduction in local share of state income tax. We're looking at about a 20% reduction in motor fuel tax because people weren't driving during the last several months. And, you know, other shared revenues are going to decrease so much, that's going to pinch people. And as you're going into right now, at the end of the year, communities are going to have to adopt their property tax levies in November and December. And, you know, that's probably going to go up because the other revenues are going down. So it's really a financial crunch right now to be able to continue offering the programs and services that most residents need and everybody desires.
37% increase in violent crimes involving guns in particular, but violent crimes in major cities across this country. Chicago is at the top of the list. But as former mayor of Carbondale, when you look, and you and I have discussed this in the past, you look at the violence that's gone on in Carbondale, and you see it's not just Carbondale, it's a great many other cities. I was wondering your thoughts, because this is something that you have faced since your earliest days in elected office.
Yeah, we had some violent crime activity when I was mayor, as you know, and we had some shootings in designated neighborhoods. And I went up there and I walked those streets at midnight and 1 a.m. and I talked to the people that were out and I told them, go home, get on your front porch, go inside, stop being out here causing trouble at midnight. And, you know, we took a direct approach. You mentioned, I think, the Heron Street Crimes Unit. We created that in Carbondale 15 years ago to specifically work on reducing violent crime, and we did that. We were very successful in that. It's growing, and it's difficult to see that happening. It's frustrating because it's happening all over the country and in communities of all sizes. So having been on the front side of that years ago and trying to reduce that violent crime and gun violence, it's unfortunate to see again. I will say that with regard to, for instance, the city of Chicago, Mayor Lori Lightfoot has led on this, and everybody knows the trouble she's got in front of her with violent crime and the increase of that lately. She's chairing a committee for the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and they've put out a report on police reform and that we've been working on to try to implement some improvements so that we can get more police out and designated to curbing this violence, these, I guess, mostly gun violence that's happening there, get more police on the street and be able to target some of this stuff. So, you know, it's an issue that's not just for large communities, but small communities as well. Obviously, the scope is different, but it's a very big concern for the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the National League of Cities, the Illinois Municipal League, and every community around the country.
You know, it's interesting, and there was a couple of days, and you look at the death totals in Illinois from COVID-19, and then look at the death totals from people shot in Chicago, and the shootings are higher in the city, not necessarily in the county. And when you take a priority and you say, well, it's all about the numbers, it's all about the science, well, the science is that more people are being shot and killed than are by this disease that you have shut down the economy for. And I think that disparity is troubling. Now, in the background, while you and I have been talking this morning, I've been having another conversation. Not that I wasn't attentive, Brad. I can multitask, but only two things at a time, really, as a rule. And I've been communicating with Ron Ellis, Williamson County Commissioner. Now, he was listening to you and I speak this morning. I wish I could merge him in the phone call, but I can't do three things at one time. So at this point, you talked about the shortage of revenues, that the priority issues from communities across, and Ron sent same thing, no money. We're short $1 million. Now, when you look at the cure funds for Williamson County, $868,541. He says we expect to get maybe 40,000 to 400,000 to 500,000 of the 868 set aside. So here you go. You've got the money, but until it's proven in the right way, you know, lost revenue, I don't know. It's about how you spend your money. I don't know about lost revenue replacement.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to get Congress to go back and change, so that the money that was already allocated can be used for lost revenue. That would make such a difference, you know, as Commissioner Ellis points out, for Williamson County, but for all of the counties throughout the state. And that's going to take an act of Congress, literally. And so we're working to generate support for that, but that's a long way off. Whether it's going to happen or not, I can't predict. But that's an example, just like what we were talking about earlier, where these communities have dollars that have been allocated to them, but they might not have exact expenses. I think, and I'm encouraging, again, everybody just needs to be creative and figure out how they can use those dollars to upgrade their equipment or their, you know, particular needs or supplies, so that they can spend that money and keep it locally.
Illinois Municipal League Executive Director Brad Cole. Brad, thanks for your time. I kept you a long time today, but I really do appreciate the input. I am going to be speaking to Dick Durbin. We've got 20 seconds. What do you want me to ask him about the cure money tomorrow?
Well, he's familiar with this issue. He's been supportive of us. We need him to help push this next round of activity at the congressional level to allow us to use the money for lost revenue and just continue to put the pressure on the state to follow the intent of the Congress with the CARES Act. He's been a good supporter on this, but we need the entire Congress to act, and we need him to act soon.
All right. This money was approved March 27th.
Yeah, and I would say, just to take the last couple of seconds, you know, we're 5 months past that stay-at-home order that was issued March 20th, effective March 21st. We're 5 months into this, and we need those dollars.